Maria, thank you so much. Wow, it's such an honor to be introduced by you. Maria was one of the first women in my home group meeting that I've actually felt comfortable around, and she was the first person I asked to sponsor me. She said she wasn't ready yet at that time, but we have become really close fellow travelers, and I'm just so incredibly thankful to have her in my life. And to be able to open my heart up and trust another woman besides the one woman that I've known since we were 6 years old. It's really significant for me, because I grew up having a really difficult time trusting women as well. We have that similarity. And I really received so much support today, and I'm so thankful for that. I had a very close fellow traveler that's very dear to me reach out to me and say that he couldn't come because his partner was in the hospital and that he probably wouldn't be able to make it. And the fact that he took the time to let me know that was pretty amazing to me. And it turns out that he's here after all. And I'll go ahead and just start with what it was like. And I don't want to spend too much time qualifying, but here it goes. When my mom and dad met, my mom was only 17 and my dad was 28, and they waited until she turned 18 and got married. And my dad was kind of saving my mom from her horrible home life. And my dad was German, and all of his friends were European. They were big drinkers and big celebrators, and come to find out that my mom was an alcoholic, and she started drinking alcoholically and had a lot of really inappropriate behaviors as well. And one of those was cheating on my dad with one of my dad's best friends, and a lot of different things. And I'm not sure exactly who split off, but my mom was soon. And they had a custody battle. And I was under three when that started, and I went into a foster home. I don't remember that, but I went to a foster home. I remember a lot of things from that time when my mom was married to her second husband, Jimmy. A lot of violence, a lot of inappropriate sexual behavior in front of me. Some really scary stuff of witnessing him being violent towards her and parties and drugs and all of that kind of stuff, and just her not being available. I remember she was pretty out of it at a party, and she asked her stepson to make me a mayonnaise sandwich. And just, you know, got into a car accidents with me, and, you know, a lot of different stuff. And it was 1979 when my dad was awarded custody, and it was really difficult for a man to get custody of a daughter at that time. And what kind of tipped the scales in his favor was the fact that it came to light that Jimmy had been molesting me. And my dad was able to bring proof to court after taking me to doctors. And most of the really hard stuff that happened when I was really young. And a lot of the things that happened, I only have little glimpses of memories of, and I don't remember a lot of it. I had a really hard time qualifying for this program originally. I had a lot of denial, but my wires were crossed by that molestation, and my dad did not know how to give me affection. So I grew up with very little affection, and my dad was not an alcoholic, but he was a workaholic. And my neglect was really severe. I was quite neglected to the point of being malnourished, and I was, as a result, a very sickly child. My cough was so bad that I had a hernia at the age of 5. I was so sick that I remember hallucinating and getting an ice bath. There was a lot of different stuff, but as a result of the severe neglect and not getting very much affection or attention, I turned into such a people pleaser, and any attention just felt good to me. I just that attention, that affection, being wanted, that and being validated. Validation was a huge drug for me, and still is to some extent. And there was some stuff that happened with my mom. There was also things that happened with other women and other girls that caused me not to trust women. Another little girl tried to drown me when I was around 5. And that was really hard in my life. And just growing up feeling so incredibly alone. I was very tortured and very bullied as a child. And fast forward, I hit puberty. I started getting attention. That started feeling good. Met my first husband. We were together for 16 years. I was 18 when we got together. So we practically grew up together. And essentially, we had a pretty good relationship until my dad died. And after my dad died, let me backtrack a little bit. My dad made the choice to change. And my dad became the closest person in my life, my best friend. And he was an incredible father. And he died in a car accident when I was 26. And our relationship more or less went downhill after that. My husband started drinking alcoholically. I wasn't in touch with my feelings. This is before recovery. So I didn't realize that I felt completely emotionally abandoned. And just drinking alcoholically and not really being a part of the relationship. And anyway, that dissolved. And and fortunately, I found myself in another relationship. And that ended up being another long-term relationship. And it was extremely, extremely difficult. I'm thankful for that relationship because he's the person that introduced me to recovery. And the pain was so great in that relationship that recovery became very important to me. And I see the most difficult things in my life have also caused the biggest growth in my life. And all of those difficult things have always just been growth opportunities. And even though when I'm in that shit, in that horrible time, it's always an opportunity for me to grow. And this was no different. And it was kind of an accident that caused me to come into ACA. A friend of mine had a skiing accident, and he was using these gel cap CBD oils that had a really small amount of THC. And I have really severe menstrual cramps, and I'm a normie, and I, you know, can have things every once in a while, and it doesn't make me need them or want them more. But he offered me these gel caps and said, you know, I take 2 of them, they don't affect my brain at all, and you should be fine. So I'm a lot smaller than he is, and I took one, and I had never been so high in my entire life. I was on the ground with my legs elevated for like 7 hours. And if I had to go to the bathroom, I was crawling to the bathroom. But during that time, all these memories started flooding in, and not just memories, but being able to correlate the things that happened to me as a child to the behaviors that were going in my life at that time. And for the first time in my life, I was able to actually get angry at my dad. And I screamed out to him, "How could you fucking do that to me? I was fucking terrified of you." And it's strange because my dad chose to change. It's like I kind of forgot all of the things that took place that caused me to be terrified of him, and how he was really inappropriate with his scoldings and spankings, and it was really, really hard. Excuse me. I wasn't nervous all day, and about 10 minutes before the meeting, I started getting nervous. So that denial lifted during that 7 hours, five, 7 hours, whatever it was. And I realized a lot. And not only was I able to get angry at my dad and my mom, but I was actually able to forgive them during that period of time as well. Somehow in that mindset, I was able to see their dysfunction, what they grew up with. I mean, my dad found his mother who had committed suicide when he was 7 years old. And she happened to hang herself where the kids were designated to play. You know, it just a lot of just really on both sides. And I realized even before ACA that they really did do the best that they could, and they didn't really have a choice other than that. And my dad did choose to change, and he made a lot of amends to me before he died in his accident. And how am I doing on time, Teresa?
You're at 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. One thing that I've learned is conscious contact, not just when I'm in trouble. Conscious contact with God. It used to be that conscious contact came pretty much when I was in trouble. And now it's like, you know, gratitude and joking and having fun, and feeling like God actually likes me. That's a really big deal for me. I went to a spiritual awakening I had, and it was shortly after my dad died, and I felt like I wanted to die. I felt like there was nothing for me in this life, and if I died, I'd have a chance to see my dad again. And I remember reaching out to God and just saying, I cannot do this anymore. And this meaning that it took 5 years just to handle my dad's estate after he died. It was lawsuits and all kinds of stuff. And it was all consuming. And I never saw that there'd be a light at the end of the tunnel. I never saw that I'd be able to get out of that. And that was what I meant by, I can't do this anymore. And I was in the worst kind of despair that I can remember. And my mind literally took a 180 in about 15 seconds from that prayer. It went from complete despair, the worst kind I can imagine, to all of a sudden, like, it's like the tunnel just opened up and everything was just expansive and big, and everything out of place, and there was so much beauty. And I was able to look at that situation and the stuff I was dealing with my dad's estate and realize that I don't have to take it so fucking seriously, that I can only do what I can do, and that's all that I can do. And it didn't have to be all consuming, that I would get through it. And I was able to go into my fear, because there was a really substantial chance that I would have gone bankrupt and lost everything that he worked for because of how things were left when he died. And I went into that fear and I said, okay, if I lose everything, what happens then? okay, then I get a 9-to-5 job like I used to have. And oh my God, that was like the best, that sounded like the best thing ever. Like, wow, I won't have all this responsibility anymore. And life will be so much easier. And that didn't happen. But as a result of going into the fear, I was able to really let the rest go. And yeah, it just goes back to say that for me, at least, the most difficult times have translated to the most growth in my life. So today in ACA, I not only maintain that conscious contact with God, I'm not always perfect at it, but I try to be really good about it. It's really important to me. And I remind myself there's just so much powerlessness and so much that I just don't have control over. There can be so much fear sometimes, and then I can pause and I can remember that God always has a plan for me, and it always just works out. And there's freedom in that for me, because I can actually sit back and allow what comes. That's a really big deal for me. And aside from that, I am still developing my relationship with my little one inside. Sometimes it's stronger than other times, but it's that's another big thing for me too. It's I need to walk her through a lot. There's a lot that still comes up. A lot of fear of abandonment. A lot of fear of rejection. Those things still surface, and it's different now because I actually have some tools to address that with her and be there with her. And what that looks like for me is I started off with non-dominant handwriting. Just recently, I asked her permission to write in two different colors because I get frustrated writing with my left hand, and she's okay with that. So we use two different colors now. And I started doing a lot of mirror work with my inner child as well, talking to her in the mirror. And another thing that my favorite client, I call her my Jewish grandmother. She's a longtime therapist, and she's been doing inner child therapy for over 30 years. And she taught me to take this childhood stuffed animal that I have and actually kind of this stuffed animal is my inner child, and talk to Lamut. this is my inner child stuffed animal, Lamut. And she said also to develop my inner loving dad separate from my inner loving parent, because my dad was so significant in my life because he raised me on his own. So I'll actually talk to Lamut, and I'll use a deeper voice, and I'll use the term Schmitch, because that's what my dad called me growing up, that term of endearment. And it is so amazing how much that gets in. When I think about it now, it's like, how does that get in so much? How do I feel such an impact from doing that? But I really do. It's astounding to me. Another thing that's so big for me, I touched on in the beginning of the share because of Maria, just being able to reach out to fellow travelers and actually having developed trust in my fellow travelers. I grew up being so tortured and so bullied and not trusting anybody and being so terrified of everybody, being so terrified of social situations. When I first came into ACA, I don't even remember how long it took me to actually share. It took a long time. And I went to, I think it was Camp Recovery for the first time, and I ended up sharing in front of like 100 people at the closing circle. But it took a long time for me to even open my mouth. It was really hard. Even though I had done Al-Anon before ACA, it was still really difficult because this was much more serious stuff for me. ACA, even though Al-Anon was my first program, ACA, I find is my program. It's what really took me out of denial and really helped me understand all of my, that all of my defects of character are actually okay. I'm powerless over a lot of those, most of those. I'm powerless over those because I'm powerless over how I grew up. And that helps me be okay with my feelings, all of my feelings. And it sometimes takes me a long time to get there still. I still feel shame for my feelings often, but then I'm able to turn it around and I'm able to use the tools and I'm able to actually be okay with the feelings and know that, again, going back to the powerlessness, I'm powerless over those things. And it's because of how I grew up. And I don't have to blame them because it's how they grew up. When I started ACA, I was already in a relationship. In the Big Red Book, it recommends that you don't go into a relationship for a year. I was already in one. And had two relationships in ACA. The 8-month relationship after my 8-year relationship was really, really hard. It was extremely difficult. And I would say that that was my bottom that caused me to decide to be celibate for some time. And I was only celibate for 6 months. Oh, I'm still, I guess, celibate, but I decided to start sober dating. And what that looks like is getting to know men for a while as friends before even talking about romance. I have a friend, fellow traveler. We got to know each other for a few months before actually even talking about romance. And I started, and another part of sober dating is to not just date one person, to actually date other people and to actually have boundaries and to trust myself and to know that I'll trust my boundaries when I place them. And I started dating another person as well. And we're just getting to get to know each other as friends. And that's great. And it's, and it definitely comes with its challenges. This is where the work comes in with my inner child. My inner child still has that fear of rejection, fear of abandonment. My inner child wants the, you know, this one person that I'm dating, a person to want to be interested in me. And I need to talk to her, and I do. And I let her know that this is what's healthy right now. This is what's healthy for him, and this is what's healthy for us. And it's going to be okay no matter what, and that I'm here for her no matter what. And, you know, the critical parent still comes in, and the critical parent will still say things like, I'll never have a good, healthy partner. And I can thank that critical parent, say, okay, I understand why you're there. We're powerless over those voices that come in. But again, it turns into another growth opportunity for me. And I get a chance to talk to that critical parent once again. And that critical parent's voice is not as strong these days. It doesn't come up nearly as often. So when it does, it's like, okay, here's the opportunity to grow. And it doesn't feel that good when I'm in the shit, but when I come out, I can say, okay, that was a growth opportunity. And I needed that. When I said yes to doing the speaker share, I knew I'd be PMSing this week. And it's a really big deal for me that I actually said yes to it. It was a really big chance for me to actually say yes, because I know where my head is at. I know how difficult it is for me this time of month. I know that that critical parent voice is very strong. I know that my inner child is that much more afraid. And so it took me, it took a lot of courage to say yes and to be here to speak tonight. Other things that, let me check with you on time, Teresa.
You're at 25 minutes, 15 to go.
Okay, thank you, Duncan. So some of the tools that I use and that are important to me, I use tapping quite a bit. I haven't used it in the last month or so. It's what I turn to when I'm like really in trouble. I think that it'd probably be good for me to use on a regular basis anyway, but there's only so many recovery tools I can actually fit in a day before, like, I don't have time to do anything else but my recovery, which I actually did for a handful of months. But I'd like to get some other stuff done. And I also have a therapist that's a fellow traveler in ACA that does EMDR therapy. And she has taken me through a lot of this trauma. And the biggest thing that I've addressed in EMDR, and it's still going on, it's ongoing, it's getting better, but it's difficult, is that it doesn't matter how someone is towards me and how they treat me. It really has no bearing on my self-worth. It has nothing to do with me. And that's just starting to sink in for me. That's still, you know, that people pleaser background and needing validation, that has been so paramount for me in my life. And so that really is, I think, the crux of my my issues that I'm still going at these days. And I like knowing also that it's okay that I'm not perfect and I'm not doing this perfect and that I'm not recovered and that I'm working a recovery program. And going back to the tools, obviously reaching out to my trusted fellow travelers. If I'm in trouble, I hit my knees and I pray with everything. I journal quite a bit. I already touched on doing mirror work with my inner child. I also have inner child playtime. I've been coloring with her lately. It's something that I could probably use more of though. And let me think. Gosh, I pretty much covered things that I wanted to cover, but so today I'm learning that I actually have worth. And I'm learning to trust myself. And I'm trusting in my higher power more and more. Trusting that it doesn't have to be my plan and my way and my control, and that there's a plan for me and it's going to work out. And I'm learning that I'm lovable, and that's really big for me. Just taking a look back at my childhood and what it was like then. Another thing that I'm so thankful for is furthering in my recovery after working the steps and going through that. I've now started working on the laundry list workbook with two other fellow travelers. And I was kind of the one that got us together because I announced at meetings, you know, is anybody willing to do this? Is anybody willing to work the laundry list workbook? And I'm still in awe, kind of, that they wanted to work the laundry list workbook with me. One has had such long time recovery, and I have so much respect for him. And they're both older than me, and I feel so incredibly close to both of them. And it's again, just as I was describing the closeness and trust that I feel with Maria, with these two as well. It's like I sit back and look at my friends and fellow travelers in recovery, and when I think about where I came from, I'm still just so amazed how close and how much trust that there can be. And I think that's all that I have for tonight, actually. So thanks so much for letting me share, everybody. Thanks for asking me to share.